Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Director Tomás Gómez Bustillo's magical tale focuses on a tiny rural village in Argentina where Rita López, a pious yet insatiably competitive woman, decides that staging a miracle could be her ticket to sainthood. The film is called Chronicles of a Wandering Saint. It is such a wonderful film that it is lighthearted in so many different ways, but also focuses on life, on the realities, the disappointments, our foibles, our shortcomings, but also about love. The film, again, is called Chronicles of a Wandering Saint. We're joined today by the director and screenwriter, Tomás Gómez Bustillo. Tomás, welcome to Film School Radio.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here. I want to start by saying this is also a film that was nominated for three Spirit Awards last year, and congratulations on that. That is unusual. This is your first feature. Is that do
I have
that
yeah, right? Yeah, it's my first feature.
Congratulations. What inspired this?
I guess we could talk about two things. One is just an image that kind of came to my head when I was finishing film school and starting to write my first feature. And the image was this silhouette that was full of light walking around in like a dark, in the darkness. And immediately I associated it with the rural myth in Argentina that we have, and I think in other parts of South America as well, of La Luz Mala, which means the bad light, which is this myth that when you're in like in a rural area and like farmlands, and in the horizon you see at night, you see like a flash of light, that it's a wandering soul, you know? And so I immediately associated with that myth, and I started to kind of try to unravel what that could mean. And then the other inspiration, I think, has a lot to do with kind of my own tastes in literature, particularly, which I, especially like in my early to mid 20s, consumed a lot of magical realism, Latin American magical realism, and reread those books like many times. And so I was just absolutely obsessed with them. So I think those two things collided at a certain time in my life where I was starting to think about making my first feature. I started developing the script from there.
Yeah. What I like about Rita's character, or the character of Rita, I should say, the character of Rita is she's flawed. She is human. She has her desires. And I think it's exacerbated by the circle of friends that she has. They sort of bring out, I wouldn't say the worst in her, but they bring out this need to prove herself in some way, I think. And I like that dynamic a lot. I just like the friendly fire sort of stuff in a character that's sort of, it's not malicious, it's just how people are. Is that a fair way to put that?
Absolutely. And, you know, thinking about when I wrote this script, at what time of my life I was writing it, it's no surprise to me that this happened when I was finishing film school, which was like a very competitive environment, and where, you know, I definitely like took so much of myself and put it in Rita, because I was in that space where I'm like, man, how can I be a great director? How can I be admired among my peers and my friends? And so you're friends, but at the same time, you really want them to think that you're really cool and then you're an amazing director. And all of that stuff, nobody really says, but you all really feel, you know? And so much of that was being channeled into the script at the time. And I really wanted to make a character that we could feel as human.
So in terms of putting together the different characters, because there are different parts of her life that she, her husband Norberto, I just thought there was such a sweetness throughout the film.
Yeah.
And he, in his way, could not have been sweeter in terms of his, how he feels about Rita. Let's talk about that sort of relationship and the actor. I really enjoyed his performance.
I think the relationship, it comes from a lot of observation and a lot of stuff that I've lived in my own like relationships. But that sweetness, I think, is something that comes with age in some people. I feel like that gentleness, like I really hope I get to have that kind of gentleness, because it's so human. It's almost, it's borderline needy, I think, too,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
which makes him even more relatable, because he's not even pretending to be something. He's straight up asking for it. And in a way that's very obvious. And so I always felt like he was our secret weapon, you know, like Rita was obviously the main character. We would see the world through her eyes, but Roberto was the secret weapon of the movie. I worked really hard to write it, but obviously it's so dependent on who you choose as an actor to embody that character. And luckily we found Horacio Marazzi, who's an incredible, incredible actor. And he wasn't like the obvious choice.
Right.
But as soon as I met him in person, I had a feeling that it had to be him,
yeah.
Because there's something that you just can't act. And he has that gentleness, you know, like he just has it. And it's so funny because he's not trying to have it, but he just has it. And that's rare quality.
He does. And there's a little thing in his performance, the fact that he was practicing guitar.
Yeah.
And he was as bad as he
was. He's terrible. He's so bad.
Is very relatable to me.
Yeah.
It was just a very relatable thing that, you know, he's asking her, how's he doing? Those kind of little touches in the film just have that lived-in relationship feel to it. It gives them such a, without having to do too much, you feel the relationship, the intimacy of the relationship.
I think that's something that took me a really long time to discover as a writer. You know, that you don't want characters talking about their history or their life or what their emotions are, but instead to find actions that communicate that history. And so practicing a new instrument, but being like really needy for the other person's, like, did you see how well I did? Like, what do you think? I'm really improving, right? And that says so much about the relationship, that you don't need to communicate that other stuff through dialogue.
We really haven't talked a lot about the story. I've sort of given the broad outlines in the introduction, but the story of her desire, let's say her plot, her scheme, is what drives the film in so many different ways. And even that is, it's really not defensible on some level what she's trying to do, but at the same time, as we talked about earlier, it's blasphemous.
It's utter sacrilege.
Yes, it is. Then that's another part of the film that I thought was, again, really pulls you in, is the devotion, the genuine devotion of the people in this village to their priest, to their religion, to each other, in many ways to each other. And help me out here, because magical realism and religion are they're kissing cousins. I mean, they're
definitely
in the same realm of the suspension of what we think of as normal life. That's the right way
to
put it.
I do think that that's a very accurate and very acute observation, because a lot of the stuff, as I was researching about the genre of magical realism, a lot of the stuff that I would find is that it really evolves so much in societies where the everyday life is intertwined with the fantastical. And that they're not separate, that they're one and the same. And so the approach to the fantastical, you wouldn't approach talking to a ghost any differently than you would drying your clothes, you know? And because they just happen every day, you know, you talk to a saint, you talk to a dead relative, and then you go out and you mow your lawn. And that's kind of, you transition from one to the other seamlessly because there is no distinction. So I think that's a really acute observation and something that's very particular also in the case of Latin America with the relationship to Catholicism.
Yeah. In the respect that you're describing it, they're of a benefit to all concerned. If you are of the belief that you can talk to your deceased relative and you genuinely feel that way and your life is enhanced without it taking over your life in some way that would be counterproductive, shall we say, So what, I mean, there's no problem, actually. It is something that continues to connect us not only to each other, but to our past. Is that, again, is that fair?
Do you mean religion?
Well, religion, I'm talking about magical realism. If the belief is that you are going out and talking to your, that, you know, your deceased cousin or something.
I think it's a human, it's just a human need almost to feel the persistence of, like, the permanence despite the absence, you know, like that there's that you may have lost someone, but they are still around somehow. And I think that, like, is so, so human that it's expressed differently in so many different cultures, but it's always kind of present in some way or another, you know, especially in, like, in the world's largest, like, mythological systems. It's like you always feel, and because it's just human, I need it, you know, like I need to believe that my grandma is still around somehow. And so now when I think about a particular thing, I think that she's there, you know, and am I just saying that story to, like, to tell myself, to soothe myself, to soothe my grief? Maybe, actually, I don't know for sure that she's there. But then again, like, don't we live in narratives all the time? Like, everything we do is a grand narrative. So you might as well pick and choose which ones you are willing to go live by.
For me personally, the two things that I think are constant in human history is the desire to tell stories, to tell each other stories. I think that is so basic. We cannot exist as humans without wanting to tell a story about something.
I agree 100%.
And the other thing that I've mind that's a little more, I guess, scientific, if you will, is that energy doesn't go away. And I believe that human existence is some measure of some kind of an energy. I don't know what that is. So I feel like I can live with that. That I can reconcile those things and in somewhat the same way you're describing.
Yeah, I think it makes sense. And every person finds the narratives that make sense to them, and to find either answers or to keep asking those same questions.
Yeah, I agree. I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with director and screenwriter Tomas Gomez Bastillo, and he is the man behind a wonderful, wonderful film that won a number of awards at the last year's Spirit Awards, three nominations. I should say nominations, pardon me. And the film is called...
We went home empty-handed, but the nominations were enough for us.
Chronicles of a Wandering Saint, and I want to let people know where they can watch the film. It's going to be playing at the IFC Center in New York City. That'll be on the 28th and 29th. You'll be there for the Q&As there.
Yeah.
And then also it'll be here in Los Angeles at the Lumiere Cinema, and that's on July 5th. You'll also be here in Los Angeles for the Q&As there. And also at American Cinematheque, you'll be there for the Q&As as well?
I believe so, yes.
Yeah. I'm really heartened by the fact that you're getting a good theatrical release for this film. I hope it finds the audience that I think will really embrace the film. I do really think that is a film that will be embraced by people who watch it. So
thank you. That means a lot. I really appreciate you saying that.
Now I want to talk a little about filmmaking.
Okay.
I think you have one of the most clever, inventive opening credits in the history of film. I mean, I love the way that you introduced, quote unquote, introduced the people behind the film in the film. I remember Raising Arizona. They waited. I may be saying too much, but anyway.
No, okay. Yeah, please.
But I mean, that was one of the longest openings before the credits. This one is spectacular. It's really well. Why did you do that? Why did you come up with it to do it that way?
Well, thank you for saying that. Those are really nice words. Honestly, that was there since the very beginning. It was in the very first draft of the film, because I just have this kind of personality where I get so fascinated by the idea of doing something differently and what would happen, what would people how would people react, that I'm more intrigued by that than by making like a perfect film. You know, I'm just more intrigued about doing something differently. And that's just because I'm just curious, you know, like I just can't help myself. And so it was there from the very beginning. It was just like, what would happen if the movie was chopped up in half? Could I still get away with it? Could it not be a gimmick? Could it really work? And I will say, like, I really owe a lot to a lot of people before me. Like, you know, we've seen Psycho, you know, like Hitchcock chops his movie up in half at a time when that was even crazier to do it. So I'm literally following in other people's gigantic footsteps. And then there's a really fantastic film by Oscar Fregatti called About Ellie, which doesn't chop it up formally, but the movie changes midway in such a radical way that it blew my mind as well. And so that, and there's another director, Api Chatbong, Weir Sakatul, who also has put credits in the middle of his movie. So I can't credit myself with the uniqueness here, but I definitely, we took a big risk, and that's what is exciting, that people have found it rewarding in general, you know?
I did. And you could almost make the case, I don't know if you would agree, but you could make the case that could have been the end of the film.
Yeah. Well, then maybe it is, you know?
Okay. Don't say too much.
Technically it is. And biologically also. So
there's so much to like. There's just so much of the film that, like I said, draws you in. The story's fun and it's serious. I keep, there's sort of this comes back and forth between the two, is it's fun and serious at the same time. But it never loses sight of the humanity of all of the characters in it. Everybody's flawed. Everybody has their something about them that it makes them more human and more likable, and all the things that we go to see movies for. So
yeah.
And finally, what's been the reaction to the film in Argentina? Has it screened in Argentina?
It has not screened in Argentina yet. I've been trying to figure out how to. Because it's an independent film, right? It's very small. We don't have the budget to literally put the film in theaters ourselves. And also Argentina is going through a very difficult time, especially for the arts. There's a lot of challenges logistically and culturally that we've encountered, but it's looking like we will be screening in theaters there later this year. So I'm very, very excited. Monica is an absolute legend.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that people are really going to connect with her and what she's doing in this film. That's what I'm hoping.
Thank you for bringing her up. I mean, I've sort of talked around her, but yes, absolutely. She is fantastic in the film. She just does a great job. Well, I'm going to just start blathering like a schoolgirl here. I just as soon want to say thank you so much for your work. I'm assuming, based on the level of recognition you've received and just what I'm hearing in your voice about filmmaking, that you're working on other stuff, that you're in the process of putting some stuff together.
Yes, I'm working on a couple of scripts. Hopefully the next film will be my first English language film.
Okay.
So I'm working on that right now. And at the same time, I have a production company called Plenty Good. Mm-hmm. And we will be, our next film is already in post-production and we're hoping that it will be released later this year. And it's a fantastic film. It's a game show heist film and it's unforgettable. It stars Paul Walter Hauser, who was in an amazing cast alongside him. And so I would urge people to be on the lookout for that one, because it's going to be really, really great.
We have a title yet?
We had a title. It was the working title is Press Your Luck, but it might end up being a different title. So we'll see where it ends up, but be on the lookout for that one. Paul Walter Hauser. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Terrific. Well, Tomás Gómez Bustillo, thank you so very much for your time as director and screenwriter of this wonderful film, Chronicles of a Wandering Saint. Thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.